The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up, as a child, Casey experienced her parents' messy divorce and was raped by her first boyfriend.
That was the hardest day of my life. Cancer's nothing.
After marriage, she suffered from depression, which led to an affair.
And 3 weeks after the secret came to light, I attempted to take my life.
Her transforming journey from past hurts to a victorious future, next.
I'm Randy Robinson. This is my wife, Debbie. My parents are off today, taking a little break. We appreciate you watching. We have a wonderful guest today. Casey Van Norman is the author of the book, Named by God, and really someone who's been through some amazing things in her life and just has an amazing testimony. That's why we've asked her, would you welcome Casey to life today?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
It's an honor.
Yeah, we need to mention up top, because we probably won't talk about it a whole lot in today's program, but your hair is not normally this short.
It's not. No, it's not. No, it's
not. The book photo is not.
No, it's not. No, I just finished my fourth round of chemotherapy 2 months ago.
Okay.
So diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma about 6 months ago. Yeah. And I've been through some chemotherapy treatments, and by the grace and mercy of God, I'm in full remission.
Full remission.
Full remission.
Good news.
So,
Yes, absolutely.
Lots of prayer.
But before getting to this latest struggle,
you've
had a few others.
I
noticed your wrist has a tattoo. It looks like a bracelet almost at first, for a glance, but it's a tattoo, and it says...
It says redeemed.
Redeemed.
Right.
Now, what led you to put the word redeemed on your wrist?
Well, I tell you, I did not start off with any desire to tell my story in a public way in front of, on a platform. I got the word redeemed because I needed to be reminded of that more than any other word in my life.
Why?
Because I have spent my life as a Christian, but as one easily believing in God, but not believing God. It was very easy for me to believe in God because I grew up in a Christian environment, a Christian home. In fact, I couldn't say I was practically born into the church nursery. And there's some perks to being born in what would be considered the Bible Belt of the world, which is, you know, small town in East Texas. It's, you know, we have a church on every corner. It's very popular to be a Christian. Mm. It's cool to be a Christian. But where that can lead to trouble is getting older and really having that gut check, that salvation check, and saying, did I ever really get the relationship aspect of that? Because it's very easy to go through the motions of going to church. And we did that. And I did have a genuine salvation experience at the age of 9. I know that because it had nothing to do with me. I had a draw to Jesus. And I was just drawn to who he was and his character and the forgiveness. I knew I needed to be forgiven. I knew I needed a Savior. There was no doubt about that. And so I accepted the Lord at the age of 9. But very soon after, my family system really started to be undone and to be frayed around the edges. And I watched my parents go through a really messy divorce at the age of 13. And being the oldest sibling, I took on that protector role for my younger two siblings. And I just didn't want them to see all the things that I thought I was seeing way too early in life. And it was a difficult scenario in that my parents became two very different people overnight. We didn't really talk about it. We didn't communicate. And so there was a lot of room left to believe that it was your fault, you know, that this happened because of you and there was no one telling you anything differently. And so from the age of 13 to 15, I really just began to doubt God. You know, I believe in God. I mean, I go to church every Sunday. I go through the motions. But I'm really struggling, God, what you say about me. You know, why is all this happening if this is who you are and that you want the best for us and you want good things for us? And if we just live this way, if we just live the right way and go to church and read our Bibles and hang out with Christian people and look the part, then you're going to bless us, right? Mm-hmm. And to see that begin to be challenged in my life. And, you know, I really hung on there for, you know, a good 2 years as a, and when your critical years, where you're forming, you know, your self-concept, the ages of 13 to 15. And while all my friends were going out and having their first dates and their first kisses and everything, I was babysitting or, you know, taking care of my youngest, my sister is 10 years younger than me. And so,
At 15, something triggered a lot of things, though.
Yeah. You know, I had already developed this very deep-seated wounding of feeling rejected, feeling unworthy, insecurity, because I grew up in a fatherless home. I mean, my dad was just non-existent in our home. And then when we were around each other, it was just fighting and arguing and alcohol and just, you know. And so I really had that desire to want by a man, to want to be told I was of value and worth and love. I mean, it's all women. We're just born with that as a desire. But at 15, my very first boyfriend, it was a date rape situation. And it was very abusive. And to have that as your first encounter with a boy when you've so longed, you know, you've watched all your friends go on the dates to the movies and hold hands and have kisses. And this is the first thing I experience. And it really just stripped me of all that I had been holding on to. You know, I'd been holding on to something, a piece of something, believing God. And then to have that happen.
So how did you respond to that?
You know, unfortunately, I just rebelled. I just got to a place where I said, you know what, God, you're going to let this, you know, this happen to me.
You blame God for letting that happen.
I really did.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any better. I didn't have anybody in my life speaking truth and encouragement and picking that, you know, going through that and saying, Casey, let's talk about why this happened, you know. I had the True Love Waits ring on. I mean, I was saving myself, and then this happened.
What was your turning moment? What turned it around for you?
Well, I really, my teenage years were really just a blur of rebellion. I say that I had this wound that was open and bleeding, and I just continued to tear it apart. Mm-hmm. I just continued by doing things. I had addictive behaviors, and as anything that we do, we're searching for that Band-Aid fix. We're searching for anything to ease the pain, for anything to comfort us in that place of hurting. So I lashed out and I had an eating disorder that hospitalized me. I would cut myself because the cutting allowed you, you know, a sense of power in a way. When you felt completely powerless, you could feel pain. I was sexually promiscuous as a teenager. All the while knowing I was a believer because I was disgusted by that place, by that sin. You know, I would be cutting my arm and just begging God to take it away. You know, I would leave every encounter with a guy just in sobs, you know, just broken, knowing the Spirit was convicting me of that sin. And then at the age of 18, I did repent of those sins. I really, this is a cliche to have your come to Jesus moment happen at church camp, but it happened at church camp.
On a mountaintop.
On a mountaintop, my mountaintop moment in Glorieta, New Mexico. And I'll never forget it because my heart was just broken, you know, for my sin. I mean, God will not allow His children to sin successfully. He will break us at some point if we do not come. In His patience, He allows us, you know, to come to repentance.
Do you think He just was wanting you to stop sinning?
I think He was just wanting me to come to Him.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely did want me to stop sinning, but why?
Right.
Because it was what was best for me, because it would make me more like His Son, because He had a divine purpose for my life that I had not disqualified myself from. Mm-hmm. Nothing that I could do or would do would ever disqualify me from this purpose that He had laid out. Yeah. But He was lining me back onto that.
What about all the hurts and things, the insecurities? I mean, did you deal with all that?
I wish I could say that I gave that all over on that mountaintop. And while I gave Him many things, I surrendered the behaviors. There was one thing that I had not surrendered, and that was the wound. That was the original affliction and wounding in my heart, deep embedded insecurity. You know, and God in His mercy and grace, He allowed me this season of really refreshing me, of drawing me back to Him, reminding me of who He was and who I was in Him. And He did that through me meeting my husband, who was the man that I thought I would never receive. He was pure and had saved himself for marriage and was just a godly, godly man, my husband, Justin. He did that by blessing me with two children, two healthy children, my Emma Grace and my Lake. And, you know, I wish that I could say that I had given all of that over to him, but I kept that wounding for myself. You know, I kept that place thinking that I could deal with it. Mm. I could deal with it, you know.
How did that resurface?
Well, it resurfaced in my marriage, you know. And I struggled with depression after my daughter was born. I was the girl that said that postpartum depression was a myth and that it was just a crutch that us moms used to wear flannel pajamas and eat bonbons and watch Oprah, you know. But, you know, when you're in the midst of it, it's a real deal. And I was definitely on the manic side. I was, I couldn't sleep. I was very anxious all the time about everything, worried about everything. And so I see myself turning into a person that I'm not, my husband, then not knowing how to respond to this. I'm not communicating. He shuts down. We both start to shut down, which many parents do with their first child. That's a big transition, and you're kind of just getting by. Every day you're just getting by. And in our marriage, it wasn't that we didn't love each other. It was just that we didn't like each other very much. And when you stop caring and you stop dating and you stop pursuing one another, then what happened in our marriages is inevitable in any marriage. And I turned to another man outside of my marriage to, again, try to be that Band-Aid fix, feed that wounding, that insecurity, that unworthiness. And 3 years in and out of this relationship outside of my marriage.
And your husband had no idea.
No idea. No idea. You know, the amazing, amazing, gracious thing about this entire situation is my husband. In that, the moment that all this secret was brought to light, he was the picture of Jesus Christ. He was forgiving. He'll tell you that the Spirit came upon him because he didn't know what he was saying as he was saying it. That he was just saying, I forgive you, I love you, I forgive you, I love you, amid the hurt and the betrayal. And it was the hardest day of my life. Mm. Cancer's nothing to coming into something like this, but then to see Jesus in that. My husband then even went a step further and he acknowledged the place that he had, the role that he had in this happening, that he had stopped caring and that he had stopped protecting me and taking care of me and just, you know, and so to see him not only forgive me, but to forgive the other man, went to his home and forgave him to his face that same day. Just incredible. Hmm. Immediately, I have a weight lifted off. I mean, it's like coming up out of a coma. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what I want to be clear about as Christians, we tend to look at other people who are struggling with these quote-unquote big sins like adultery or you know, theft or murder, whatever, you know, these big sins. And we tend to, you know, push that to the side in another category. And, you know, I think we think that they're having fun in those situations, that they're somehow having a good time. And what was really happening is I was decaying on the inside. I mean, I was running fever and I was sick and I dropped so much weight and I was just, my body was deteriorating in the sin. It was not meant for that any longer. And so it just couldn't hold it up. And, you know, I just cried out to God, you know, please take my life because I can't carry this anymore. And that day I prayed that prayer, cried out to him at 8:30 a.m. and at 12:30 p.m. that same day, the sin came to light. Hmm. It was just God's mercy and his bringing me back to him and saying, look, you know, I'm not done with you. Unfortunately, the gossip began then. You know, my husband and I are experiencing this rejuvenation in our marriage.
Sure.
We're experiencing, you know, this trust building again where we're knowing each other again for the first time and things are so good for us, but everybody else, different story.
Sure.
You know, and so these lies begin, these rumors begin, and the gossip begins, and it's crushing to me as one that is very social and outgoing and loves people.
Right.
And then to go to the grocery store and someone who was your friend is apparently no longer your friend and go to church and be rejected by your church. I mean, it's just, it was it was more than I thought I could take. And
in fairness, not just the lies and the gossip, which no doubt mm-hmm. happened, but mm-hmm. the truth was out
right.
there.
Right.
I mean, how?
Yeah.
How did you get up in the morning knowing that everybody knows the truth, much less the other stuff?
It was just God's strength that I got up, because there was nothing left in me. I had no desire to get up. Mm. And 3 weeks after the secret came to light, I attempted to take my life. Mm. Because in the moment, you know, you say that taking your life is the most selfish thing, and it is. But for the person considering it, it's the least selfish thing. For the person considering it to be the truth, mm. to be the person that you never thought you would be, that you always said mm-hmm. you would never do that. Mm-hmm. And then for the rumor to be true.
Yeah.
You know, it just breaks you for everything that you are, and that this, and Satan is there. You know, he wants you to believe.
Okay, on the one hand, you're saying, here's my husband forgiving me.
Right.
And here's this weight lifted off of my life. How does it go spiral downhill from there, right?
Because if I'm looking to my husband to, again, fill that gap yeah. in his forgiveness, it's still not going to work, is it? Mm. Because he's flesh. And so the big change for me, I was so broken. I mean, I say I was a dead woman. Mm-hmm. It was just by the grace of God that I did not die that day, that I lived and he pulled me up. There was nothing else responsible. Not my husband's forgiveness, mm-hmm. not a friendship, not my church, nothing else responsible. I was dead and he brought me up to life. And he, you know, he spoke that truth over me. And that is where this book came from. That next 3 months, I call my summer of sanctification, because I just secluded myself to my home. I did nothing. I saw no one, did not talk on the phone, no internet, no social media, nothing. I cut down all connection with the outside world just so that I could experience God again and come back to him.
To heal, finally.
To heal.
Yeah.
And the big redemption is that I learned that just surrender is not enough. Just redemption is not enough. But when you put those two things together, mm-hmm. you talk about abundant living. Mm-hmm. You talk about freedom. Mm-hmm. When you can surrender, and look, I was surrendering the behaviors, but those were just symptoms of the infection.
Right.
That was just a symptom. Everything we do is a symptom of something deeper. And I had to surrender that place of bitterness, that place of anger, that place of resentment. You know, of needing to be filled that insecurity. And once I could surrender that and then go a step further and start to believe not these other people, not my community, not the church necessarily, but what does God say about me? Mm-hmm. That's redemption.
Yeah. And that's the names that you talk about in Name by God. I want to thank you for being here and sharing so openly and candidly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's important, though, that people see where you've been and where God is taking you, because so many people are in some stage of that right now.
Yeah.
If you want to read Casey's full story, it is available, and we are giving this book to you with your gift towards Mission Water for Life. I really know it's going to bless you or somebody perhaps that you know. But at the same time, when you support our outreach, you're going to bless someone else. Real quickly, I want to take you halfway around the world so that you can see where I went as we reach out and share water with people around the world. I want to look at this water. Good Lord. Ah, it smells horrible. It smells worse than it looks. But this is what they drink, because this is all they have to drink. This is not water that you can live from. This is water that will kill you. You know, I have seen diseases. I have seen children with sores and kids have diarrhea. I've seen graves. I've sat with a mother while she wept over her children that she lost because of this contaminated water. This is death water, and it's killing their children. I would never make a child drink this, but these children have no choice. It's this or nothing, and some of them don't know that it will kill them. It's not enough to tell them, don't drink the water. We have to say, here's water you can drink. Jesus calls himself living water because he brings life. We are his hands and his feet. Help us demonstrate the gospel as we bring them water for life. You know, there's not much better in this world than to see a child smile. And when you know that they're smiling because you joined with us in Mission Water for Life and made that fresh, clean drinking water possible, I tell you what, that's a feeling. There's just not much in this world that's better than that. That's the invitation I want to extend to you right now. Join with us on Mission Water for Life. You can impact a life for their lifetime. It's a gift that just keeps on giving. The average well is $4,800, and that reaches an average of 1,000 people. I know in that village I was in, there were more than 1,000 in that area that would come to that well to get clean drinking water, but on average, that's what it does. So your gift of $4,800 will reach 1,000 people. You will give them clean drinking water. What a huge thing. You will eradicate sickness, and you will show them the love of Jesus Christ wherever we go. We're not shy about the fact that we are there representing Jesus Christ. We are his hands, we are his feet. That's what the Bible tells us. I want you to do that right now. If you can give $1,200, we'll send you the lion and lamb bronze that will serve as a reminder of your gift. And I hope you'll put it somewhere that you can see it and you will remember the smile that you saw, because you're putting smiles on other children's faces. Now, some of you, you know, that's a lot of money, I understand. I want you to know that there's not a gift that's too big, but there's not a gift that's too small. $48 will give water to 10 people. How simple is that? It's simple, and yet the impact is profound. And so long, it just keeps on giving. That's the thing that just astounds me, is how a simple act of drilling a water well has such an incredible impact for years and generations. Will you join us right now? Will you go to the phone? Call us, make the best gift you can. It's all about obeying God's great commission to go out and reach others. So don't get hung up on what you can or can't give. Just obey God and join with us in this great mission. Go online. There's the website right there. That's how I give. Do what you can. If we will all join together, we will reach our goal. Hundreds of wells in so many countries, impacting so many lives. But we can't do it without you. Join us now. Join us in Mission Water for Life. And thank you as you give.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease, or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we can establish and drill 350 new water wells for remote villages in 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people, $72 will impact 15 people, and $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, be sure to request Arise, a beautiful new daily devotional featuring words of encouragement from inspiring women who have shared their faith on life today. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request the Arise audio-visual devotional featuring 40 days of inspiration from Life Today's favorite women guests. Please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And be sure to request the 2012 commemorative bronze sculpture, The Lion and the Lamb. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
You know, I'm kneeling down here by what is a common water source for little village areas. This river meanders through this part of Central America. And it's the water source. It's contaminated with animal waste. It's contaminated with human waste because they don't have any sewage. They have no running water. So they go to the bathroom out here in the bush and the brush. And then it washes here. And people get all kinds of intestinal diseases. And clean water, fresh water, that's the answer. And this is what they have now, making them sick, killing a lot of them, very young. But we can give them a fresh water well. You may be able to give one, or give toward it, or give a cup of water that adds up and becomes a well of water. But we need everyone's help. You make a life-giving call today, please.
Thank you so much for helping with Mission Water for Life, and do ask for Casey's book. It's going to bless you. And visit her website, CaseyVanNorman.com. You can find out about her, and you can even ask her to come speak to your women's group or church. I'm sure she would be a great blessing to you. Thanks again for sharing your story. Would you thank Casey for being here on Live Today? Thank you so much.
Faith, family, and freedom are under attack. As America faces battles within, many wonder where to turn. In their new book, James Robison and Jay Richards call us to stand together before it's too late. As one nation, truly under God. Indivisible, the New York Times bestseller, now available in paperback at online and retail bookstores.
But God's plan is always to heal. You've not been through the one thing that Jesus Christ cannot heal.
Overcoming family calamity tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.